Gatehouse Wards International ESOL Classic Listening Examination. Level 1, B2. Sample, Set 2. This examination consists of 3 tasks. In each task, you will hear a recording and then must answer the questions in the candidate booklet. You will hear each recording twice. You will be given 1 minute to read the questions before the recording is played. You may now open your booklet. Listening, Task 1. Listen to the recording and answer the questions. You now have 1 minute to read the questions. Listening, Task 1.
Hey Maria, it's really good to see you again. How long has it been? At least a month since we last had dinner together, right? Are you feeling rested after your holidays?
It's good to see you too, Andy. It was a great holiday in the end, but the first 3 days were awful. I couldn't believe how it began.
Maria, only you could spend 2 weeks in Paris, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, and complain about it.
Well, don't be too quick to judge. I haven't even told you what happened yet.
You're right. I'm sorry. What happened?
Oh, it all started well. When we were checking in, they upgraded us to first class seats free of charge, and we landed ahead of schedule. But then the fun part of the holiday pretty much ended when we got past security.
You weren't trying to smuggle anything, were you?
You're not listening, are you? Haven't I just said we got past security?
I'm sorry. Go on.
So I got my passport back, said thank you and goodbye in my best French, and then it started. We spent almost an hour waiting by the luggage carousel, and guess what? My suitcase wasn't there.
You're joking. What about Robert's?
Nope, his wasn't there either. So I was stood there, thinking about all those romantic meals we were going to treat ourselves to in the top Parisian restaurants, and the only clothes we had between us were what we had on. Scruffy t-shirts, shorts and our trainers.
Well, what did you do?
Of course, we reported it to the airline. First of all, they kept telling us to be patient and that our luggage would eventually turn up. But after another hour, even they realised it wasn't going to happen. When they finally made some phone calls, it turned out that there wasn't even a record of our luggage on the system.
Seriously? What did you do?
Well, at that stage, I felt I'd had enough and simply burst into tears. But thankfully, Robert was a bit more composed. He filled in the form the airline gave us, put me in a taxi, and took me straight to the nearest shopping centre.
Wow, that was very sweet of him.
I know. We got some clean clothes and other necessities, such as toothbrushes. But I wasn't going to replace my whole holiday wardrobe, was I? I was still hoping at that stage that our luggage would turn up that evening, or the following day at the latest.
And did it?
Yeah, right. It took them 3 days to actually locate it on the system, and then another 3 to fly it back to Paris.
Surely they paid you some compensation for all the inconvenience. I mean, all the time, stress and additional expenses it caused.
When we got back from Paris, we received a letter from the airline telling us that they've processed our claim and that it's going to take them 20 working days to make the payment. That's over a month and a half after they lost our luggage. Do you think that's acceptable?
I know that I'd be very upset if that happened to me, but I guess they need the time to deal with the paperwork.
Well, it didn't happen to you, Andrew, and I'm not sure you'd be feeling so generous if it was your holiday that got ruined. Anyway, let's talk about something else.
You will now hear the recording again.
Hey, Maria. It's really good to see you again. How long has it been? At least a month since we last had dinner together, right? Are you feeling rested after your holidays?
It's good to see you too, Andy. It was a great holiday in the end, but the first 3 days were awful. I couldn't believe how it began.
Maria, only you could spend 2 weeks in Paris, one of the most beautiful cities in the world, and complain about it.
Well, don't be too quick to judge. I haven't even told you what happened yet.
You're right. I'm sorry. What happened?
Oh, it all started well. When we were checking in, they upgraded us to first class seats free of charge, and we landed ahead of schedule. But then the fun part of the holiday pretty much ended when we got past security.
You weren't trying to smuggle anything, were you?
You're not listening, are you? Haven't I just said we got past security?
I'm sorry, go on.
So I got my passport back, said thank you and goodbye in my best French, and then it started. We spent almost an hour waiting by the luggage carousel, and guess what? My suitcase wasn't there.
You're joking. What about Robert's?
Nope, his wasn't there either. So I was stood there, thinking about all those romantic meals we were going to treat ourselves to in the top Parisian restaurants, and the only clothes we had between us were what we had on, scruffy t-shirts, shorts and our trainers.
Well, what did you do?
Of course, we reported it to the airline. First of all, they kept telling us to be patient and that our luggage would eventually turn up. But after another hour, even they realised it wasn't going to happen. When they finally made some phone calls, it turned out that there wasn't even a record of our luggage on the system.
Seriously? What did you do?
Well, at that stage, I felt I'd had enough and simply burst into tears. But thankfully, Robert was a bit more composed. He filled in the form the airline gave us, put me in a taxi, and took me straight to the nearest shopping centre.
Wow, that was very sweet of him.
I know. We got some clean clothes and other necessities such as toothbrushes, but I wasn't going to replace my whole holiday wardrobe, was I? I was still hoping at that stage that our luggage would turn up that evening or the following day at the latest.
And did it?
Yeah, right. It took them 3 days to actually locate it on the system and then another 3 to fly it back to Paris.
Surely they paid you some compensation for all the inconvenience. I mean, all the time, stress and additional expenses it caused.
When we got back from Paris, we received a letter from the airline telling us that they've processed our claim and that it's going to take them 20 working days to make the payment. That's over a month and a half after they lost our luggage. Do you think that's acceptable?
I know that I'd be very upset if that happened to me, but I guess they need the time to deal with the paperwork.
Well, it didn't happen to you, Andrew, and I'm not sure you'd be feeling so generous if it was your holiday that got ruined. Anyway, let's talk about something else.
Listening, task 2. Listen to the recording and answer the questions. You now have 1 minute to read the questions. Listening, task 2.
Before I started my university course, I decided to take a gap year. I spent it working as a volunteer primary school teacher in Kenya. The most important thing I learned during my year away was how to be more confident. Self-confidence takes many forms. all of which will help me enormously during my studies at university. I didn't think I was very brave when I first decided to volunteer in Kenya. I mean, I was sitting in front of a computer screen in my cosy bedroom in my parents' house. But that changed when I arrived at the airport with the ticket to Kenya in my hand. I was surrounded by all these strangers and suddenly realised that getting on that plane meant I was going to be all alone from then on. But I did it, and the fact that I didn't go back home that day helped me to become the confidence person I am now. When I arrived at my destination in Kenya, I was surprised to learn that my new house had only 2 bedrooms, and I had to share it with 3 other girls. I'd always had my own bedroom in my mum and dad's house, so it was a bit of a shock. I now know that it's easy to get to know people if you make some effort, and you can make amazing friends that way. But back then, I was feeling very lonely and sad to have left all my friends behind. It took me about a week to start feeling comfortable around the other girls, and we eventually became good friends. Before my gap year, I used to find travelling on my own a bit tricky, especially in a foreign country. However, living in Kenya showed me that travelling is not scary or difficult. Quite the opposite. I learned that there's always a way to get around, even if you haven't booked your ticket weeks in advance. Public transport in East Africa is totally unpredictable. The main form of public transport in Kenya are minibuses, also known as matatus, and a lot of the passengers don't even wear seatbelts. Matatus rarely follow timetables, and you never know if they're going to stop for you. Another important thing I learnt is how to adapt to different situations. In my country, people expect things to always go to plan, but it's different in Kenya. Things rarely do. This would have made me so annoyed a few years ago, but now my attitude is much more relaxed. It will happen when it happens. I feel like this attitude is much healthier in our stressful society. Lastly, my gap year taught me about the importance of being open to other people and experiences. In Kenya, I spent my time with a diverse group of people. Some of them were not the kind of people I would have normally hung out with, and yet I got on with them all really well. It shows you that people can have qualities you admire, whatever their background. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention food. My mother is really happy now. She can cook much more varied meals because I've started to eat many things I never did before.
You will now hear the recording again.
Before I started my university course, I decided to take a gap year. I spent it working as a volunteer primary school teacher in Kenya. The most important thing I learned during my year away was how to be more confident. Self-confidence takes many forms, all of which will help me enormously during my studies at university. I didn't think I was very brave when I first decided to volunteer in Kenya. I mean, I was sitting in front of a computer screen in my cosy bedroom in my parents' house. But that changed when I arrived at the airport with the ticket to Kenya in my hand. I was surrounded by all these strangers and suddenly realised that getting on that plane meant I was going to be all alone from then on. But I did it, and the fact that I didn't go back home that day helped me to become the confidence person I am now. When I arrived at my destination in Kenya, I was surprised to learn that my new house had only 2 bedrooms, and I had to share it with 3 other girls. I'd always had my own bedroom in my mum and dad's house, so it was a bit of a shock. I now know that it's easy to get to know people if you make some effort, and you can make amazing friends that way. But back then, I was feeling very lonely and sad to have left all my friends behind. It took me about a week to start feeling comfortable around the other girls, and we eventually became good friends. Before my gap year, I used to find travelling on my own a bit tricky, especially in a foreign country. However, living in Kenya showed me that travelling is not scary or difficult. Quite the opposite. I learned that there's always a way to get around, even if you haven't booked your ticket weeks in advance. Public transport in East Africa is totally unpredictable. The main form of public transport in Kenya are minibuses, also known as matatus, and a lot of the passengers don't even wear seatbelts. Matatus rarely follow timetables, and you never know if they're going to stop for you. Another important thing I learnt is how to adapt to different situations. In my country, people expect things to always go to plan, but it's different in Kenya. Things rarely do. This would have made me so annoyed a few years ago, but now my attitude is much more relaxed. It will happen when it happens. I feel like this attitude is much healthier in our stressful society. Lastly, my gap year taught me about the importance of being open to other people and experiences. In Kenya, I spent my time with a diverse group of people. Some of them were not the kind of people I would have normally hung out with, and yet I got on with them all really well. It shows you that people can have qualities you admire, whatever their background. Oh, and I almost forgot to mention food. My mother is really happy now. She can cook much more varied meals because I've started to eat many things I never did before.
Listening, task 3. Listen to the recording and answer the questions. You now have 1 minute to read the questions. Listening, task 3. Speaker 1.
Do I think that it's important to save money? I've never really thought about it before. I guess it depends on how well off you are. For example, if you earn a good wage and usually have money left at the end of the month, then I guess it's not that important. But if you live on a modest amount of money every month, which only just allows you to pay the bills and do your food shopping, then I guess you have to learn how to save to afford nice things such as holidays or a new laptop. I don't really save my money because I'm still young and don't have any kids to support. So, I guess if I'm not going to spend my money as I like at this stage in my life, it's never going to happen, right?
Speaker 2. I definitely agree it's an important thing to do, but I can't say I'm very good at it, I'm afraid. My parents, on the other hand, are amazing savers, especially my mother. She puts money aside every single month, no matter what. Even when she wasn't working, because she was staying at home with the kids, she still managed to feed and clothe her entire family using just my father's salary and save a little every month too. I still remember arguing with her about having to wear my brother's school jackets and about not getting as much pocket money as some of my friends. But I understand her motivation now. Whether you're rich or poor right now, it's important to have savings for your future. Speaker 3.
I think saving money is fun. Last year we had a project at school. and all the children tried to save some of their pocket money to give to a good cause at the end of the month. I saved £5 and decided to donate it to an animal charity. It made me feel really good, and now I try to save a little bit of money every month. Also, whenever my grandparents give me money for birthdays or Christmas, I like to put it in a little box in my bedroom. When I have saved enough, I like to go shopping to buy something I really want. But you know what feels even better? Giving it to somebody who needs it more than you do.
You will now hear the recording again. Speaker 1.
Do I think that it's important to save money? I've never really thought about it before. I guess it depends on how well off you are. For example, if you earn a good wage and usually have money left at the end of the month, then I guess it's not that important. But if you live on a modest amount of money every month, which only just allows you to pay the bills and do your food shopping, then I guess you have to learn how to save to afford nice things such as holidays or a new laptop. I don't really save my money because I'm still young and don't have any kids to support. So I guess if I'm not going to spend my money as I like at this stage in my life, it's never going to happen. Right?
Speaker 2. I definitely agree it's an important thing to do, but I can't say I'm very good at it, I'm afraid. My parents, on the other hand, are amazing savers, especially my mother. She puts money aside every single month, no matter what. Even when she wasn't working, because she was staying at home with the kids, she still managed to feed and clothe her entire family using just my father's salary and save a little every month too. I still remember arguing with her about having to wear my brother's school jackets and about not getting as much pocket money as some of my friends. But I understand her motivation now. Whether you're rich or poor right now, it's important to have savings for your future. Speaker 3.
I think saving money is fun. Last year we had a project at school and all the children tried to save some of their pocket money to give to a good cause at the end of the month. I saved £5 and decided to donate it to an animal charity. It made me feel really good, and now I try to save a little bit of money every month. Also, whenever my grandparents give me money for birthdays or Christmas, I like to put it in a little box in my bedroom. When I have saved enough, I like to go shopping to buy something I really want. But you know what feels even better? Giving it to somebody who needs it more than you do.
This is the end of the listening examination.